I have some cherry limeade Bud Seltzer deal going on since it's after dark or getting close to dark.
After dark. Applebee's after dark.
We're back at Applebee's.
We're back at Applebee's. Yeah, the line at Texas Roadhouse is way too long.
Yeah, all that talk and promotion we gave them last week, really.
Yeah, the town flooded over there.
Well, yeah, certainly. I mean, it was our fault. We made mistakes. Spider said it was clear. I wasn't clear, and, you know, I didn't want to tear my car up, tear his car up either. I respect everybody, and I demand respect. And, you know, I apologized to the guy when he came over the car, explained to him what happened. And then he took it to another level when he started calling me an idiot and whatever else. And I don't appreciate that. I'm not going to take it. I told him how I feel. I called him out. He didn't show. You know, and so, you know, I'm good with it if he's good with it, but I'm not going to be disrespected by no means.
Yeah, I guess I had a dinner date at Applebee's last night that I didn't find out until it was too late. It's a shame. Love their riblets and boneless wings, but...
say that, you know, because g'day mate, welcome to Outback.
Oh,
it's your Australian supercars podcast.
I fucking wish it was, to be honest with you.
Oh.
How bad was that accent?
That's pretty good.
I practiced that, and I knew it was going to be bad, so I had to try to.
I think that was fine.
A few times.
I mean, it's good. It's good enough for theater. So.
Well, hey, yeah, we're a racing podcast, and we have some Australia nonsense to talk about today on the show. Not just Australia, New Zealand, I guess, technically.
Kiwi. Shane Van Gisbergen is Kiwi, as is Scott McLaughlin, so...
Well, there you go. So, yeah, I'm Brian with Rob and Ashley, as always. Folks, how we doing this week?
I'm tired, Brian. How are you, true love?
I'm tired.
Yeah, we're all fucking tired.
Hell
tired
yeah.
Tired of life. Tired of bullshit.
Brian just dumped a bunch of pre-workout on top of our queso dip here, so we'll be bright and sunshiny in about 5 minutes.
Okay, what's Outback's Bloomin' Onion? They got it. Is it just...
Oh, that's right. We're at Outback today.
We're at Outback today.
That's all they got is...
We're down under, mate.
We're down under. You put it in me Foster's then, Gav.
Okay, well, I think that's enough for this episode.
Cheers, then. Don't to catch on.
Call it a wrap.
Thank you, Governor.
I don't think that's... They don't say that in Australia.
They don't.
they have governors?
When I toured down in Australia, I would pull that one a lot just to piss people off. Thank you, Gov. That's a cool country, though, and the supercars are cool. And I wish there was an easier way to watch that series here, because it really would give everybody an idea of how sort of unsurprising this big win by Van Gisbergen was. You know, and unsurprising is probably a little bit extreme. You know, it's pretty remarkable for anybody to drop into a cup car and just win right off the trot.
Well, Rob, hold on. We got to get into this here before we get too deep into the Shane convo. We went to Charlotte, or not Charlotte, Jesus fucking Christ. We were in Chicago this weekend.
Yes.
The big weekend finally happened. All the bullshit is over with, all the speculation, all the racism on Twitter. It's all over with. It happened.
I don't know if racism on Twitter is over, but yeah.
Well, it's not over yet, whatever. We'll maybe touch on that, maybe not. But the race happened.
I have a feeling we'll do some touching on that.
Yeah. And you know, for all the belly aching people did, and even for myself, you know, I wasn't exactly thrilled about it. It turned out, through all the bullshit, turned out to be a pretty cool fucking race.
Yeah, absolutely. I very much enjoyed it too.
Yeah, it was real fucking.
You know,
I said that probably 100 times this weekend.
Yeah, it really was, and I gotta say, like, I would take that road racing over the other road racing we have. Let's get rid of them all, maybe except for Watkins Glen. Let's just fucking leave that to IMSA. You know, let the real sports car series handle it, and we'll go hang out in the streets of fucking Chicago or Baltimore or fucking Des Moines or, yeah, right around this fucking Outback Steakhouse we're sitting in. Let's put them right out there in the mall parking lot. Two times a year, anywhere in the U.S. or in the world, let's do that again, because that was fucking killer.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, you know, the the track looked great on TV. Yeah.
Breathtaking views of the city, and that's how you lay out a street course, really, if you're gonna do it. Like, they really
you gotta put it right smack dab in there.
Yeah, sometimes it doesn't look like much of anything. Like, I remember, like, back in the day when IndyCar would go to, like, Denver and shit like that, it just looked, I don't know, fucking terrible. Or Houston, it's just in the parking lot of a fucking stadium. You know, this is really in the middle of the city, and you actually can look and know. It looked like something off of a fucking PlayStation game.
Yeah, I mean, there was that
so
one
cartoonish,
shot.
So cartoonish,
you know? Yeah, they're coming over the hill, and you can see just regular traffic in the distance behind them. Like, that's fucking cool. Like,
yeah, that's... Yeah,
undeniably cool.
That's how you do it.
And, you know, it was a weird weekend at the same time, where weather kind of wreaked havoc, but yet also made the racing better, which is kind of an odd thing to say, but, you know... Say what you want about the Xfinity race. We didn't really even get a good idea of what that race was going to be like because we didn't even see half of it. Yeah. But, you know, we got to see the majority of the Cup race. And, you know, for again, as much chaos as the rain really put on the whole weekend, it also it made the racing itself much trickier, much more challenging, and it really gave the guys a run for their money as far as just staying on the course and figuring out how to get around that place. And we saw it time and time again with top stars getting into tire barriers and massive pileups that blocked the whole track. You know, I don't know.
It only happened once.
Okay, only once, but
just once.
I don't know. I don't know if the race would necessarily be as exciting as it was without that weather. You know, it probably would have still been decent, but I think just the fact that you threw the rain in the mix there and the evolving track throughout those few hours, like, it just really added another element to the whole thing. And
for sure, cool. These Cup cars are based off V8 supercars. They share a lot of the same base design and even some of the same components, as far as I know. I think the Cup cars have a wider tire or something like that, so they're probably a little easier to drive than the supercars are. But that's what Aussie supercars are. They race on street circuits. And these cars, if there was ever a place for these to look good on and race well on, it's what we just did. And if these cars weren't going to race good on this circuit, then we really have a fucking problem with the road racing package. But ended up being a moot point. You know, I think NASCAR was very close to having a very different set of storylines on their hands. Mm-hmm. But miraculously, the track dried out enough to get guys out there, because there's about a foot of water on pit road, it looked like, from what we were seeing before the race.
I read that NASCAR was 15 minutes from calling the race on Sunday.
Yep.
Yeah. Pretty crazy. And then a lot of the concerts got canceled. You know, Chainsmokers got canceled, which I guess that is just an act of God doing good. But, you know, hey, people like whatever they like. And, you know, that's got to be a bummer to pay a bunch of money to go see something and not have that happen. So I guess that is a drawback of holding an event in the way that they did in Chicago, where it's not just a race. It's a whole festival kind of, you know, timeshare kind of thing. You know, if one bit gets canceled, you know, you don't get refunds for that. So we'll see how that plays. Again, you can't really do much of anything about it. It's the fucking weather. And it was unprecedented weather, too.
And unfortunately, I think also part of that was due to the city. It wasn't even like if what had happened, you know, Saturday and Sunday, it happened at an actual track, there's probably a good chance they would have figured out how to at least get the concerts done. Whereas, you know, unfortunately... You know, again, for all of its pluses from the weekends, I mean, there were some minuses. But again, I couldn't give a shit about it. I don't go to races for concerts, so
yeah.
You know, for the small handful of the audience that was there for that, it sucks for them. But I think for the rest of us who were actually there to see racing or to watch racing,
But NASCAR is goddamn lucky that race was so good.
Yes,
if it was anything other than what we got, I think everybody would have a different mood and candor when they were talking about this weekend, unfortunately.
But I mean, that's
just hope they don't use it as a fucking excuse to do this like 36 weekends a year.
I don't think they can afford to do more than
God, no.
Really.
Yeah, what is like a $40 million expense to get it off the ground, and who knows if they'll even go back, so there's just going to be a bunch of jersey barrier and tires and shit sitting in a warehouse somewhere.
That's not true, because all that shit is, they use the company that builds the Nashville track, the Nashville Street Course, so that's all shit that NASCAR didn't have to necessarily invest in all that stuff. I think that was all their fencing and barriers and all that stuff. So,
oh, okay. I say that because, again, I mentioned this to a group thread I'm in. I forget if it was you guys or a different one, but there's a really great Dinner with Racers episode about the Long Beach Grand Prix and how they sort of invented the modern American street race and how they kind of had to figure it out on the fly, and they ended up having to start their own company to have these jersey barriers and a place to sort of rent them to themselves and then maybe rent them out to other events if you can. So it just kind of balloons into and all this just to say it's incredible they were able to even pull it off from scratch. I mean, street racing is something that happens all over the world, but it's really cool to see them do it in such a way to where it really worked out, and hopefully we see it again. I can't believe I'm saying that, but I really hope that this contract continues, and I hope that this continues to happen in Chicago. I would actually go to it, to be honest with you.
Yeah,
I don't know if I'd go, just be, but
by one tickets, they got the prices down a little bit.
Yeah, they need to get rid of the whole F1 element too, because that's definitely what they were trying to sell that event as to the outside fans. Whereas us, you know, lifelong fans, we're not buying that, and we've been to road courses, and I'm not paying $300 for a seat where I'm going to see 30 seconds of action every 2 minutes.
I'll pay to see a race, but I'm not going to pay the extra money added on to see the fucking chain smokers.
Yeah, I couldn't give a fuck about any of that stuff. Yeah. Not at all.
But I got one more thing before we kind of move on and talk about whatever we're going to talk about next. I just loved seeing people like 6-7 deep at the fence in all the corners in the GA section, just like and craning to see what was going on and getting their minds blown by, you know, having a stock car blow past them. Probably not even that fast. It wasn't that fast of a race course, to be honest with you.
People on Saturday who didn't buy tickets were like climbing on shit in the city to get a look at cars.
Yeah. And then you got people trying to break into the track at night to drive on it. Like, I think that shit's hilarious and awesome. Yeah. And I don't think that, like, the sort of, to me, that's the highlight, really, aside from a great race, is the fact that people really, I get a kick out of watching people see this shit in person, you know, because it really doesn't get old to get your hat blown off by race cars, you know, and to get that experience in your hometown, you know, on just some fucking street in the middle of the city is pretty awesome. So, yeah, I'm glad that those people got to experience that, and hopefully when the city shuts this down and they have to drive to, like, fucking, I don't know, what's the closest oval?
Chicago.
If that even is going to exist anymore, when they got to drive back to Kentucky in a few years, we'll see.
Crazy enough, I would actually be psyched if they went back to Kentucky, because that's another track that's like not even 4 hours from me. So
yeah, the racing's great there.
Well, it could be even better now with a new car, but I guess we'll see if that ever, you know, takes fruition. But regardless, we got to talk about the actual race itself. We don't really need to talk about the Xfinity race. I mean, again, there wasn't really much to talk about there. They were barely getting started. Rob more or less predicted it, what was going to happen, and it happened. The Kiwi came in and kicked everybody's ass. You know, I knew he was going to be good, even though I didn't really know much about him, but first time that's ever happened in our lifetimes, at the very least, and who knows if it'll ever happen again. But Shane Van Gisbergen was your Chicago winner, and it was fucking really cool to see.
Boy, really putting Daniel Suarez on the old hot seat. Good God.
A little bit. I mean,
I would say a lot bit. That guy has been sucking lately. And then Chastain's winning races now. And then some dude just flies in and wins on a third team with all the scraps. No offense to Darian Grubb and the boys, but, like, you know, that's not your number one and two track house teams right there. And Shane is an incredible talent at that particular style of racing and that type of car.
Yeah.
Granted, but still, come on, man.
I think that car that he drove was one of the winning cars, though. I think it might have been the one that
it was one Suarez won in at Sonoma.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, they have, it's, Justin Marks is doing the right thing with that team, and he's putting those guys in the best equipment he has, because he wants them to succeed too. It's not just like a show for him. Like, he's not just having these guys come in. Like, he wants them to actually perform, and it fucking happens.
He still gets prize money and contingency and all that shit. You know, it doesn't matter who wins it, and, you know, one of his guys is already locked in. So, and Suarez isn't going anywhere. So,
But yeah, it was cool. You know, I don't know much about SVG. You know, I got a kick out of everyone calling out his footwork and him calling it out as Americans having a foot fetish. That was hilarious.
Well, Grant, it is how he won the race.
Yeah, and I'm curious right. to see if other drivers in America just try to start learning that yeah. Driving style again, because it clearly was the reason why he won.
I'm not even sure Kyle Larson knows how to shift. You know?
Well, I can't remember. I maybe it was Denny that talked about it on his show, but kind of explained how being able to heel toe and ride the clutch, like it reduces brake hop and allows you to get deeper into the corners without your wheels, hopping at all. So
yeah,
that's one of the reasons why it worked. So yeah, I mean, I'm interested to see, because you got to imagine, you watched all the cup guys get their asses handed to him by this guy, and that's how he did it. You have to imagine that at least a handful of them are going to start to try to mimic that style.
Yeah, I bet the Skip Barber phone line was probably lighting up pretty hot on Monday morning.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was cool. A bunch of dudes ate shit into tire barriers and still drove Gregson. On to top five finishes.
I hope if they go back, they name turn six after Noah next year.
It's so funny.
He earned it. Yeah. Wendy's owns that corner now. Good Lord.
Four times into that one.
Denny had the audacity to say that he had a good car until the first time he hit the wall, which I don't think... Has Gregson, like, even finished a road course race in the Cup Series?
Couldn't tell you.
I don't know.
I don't feel like he has.
I forget he's there unless he's getting the dumb haircut or trying to fight somebody.
Yeah. It's a fair point. But, yeah, I don't know, man. I just don't know what else to say about this race. I mean, the race itself was just, it was cool.
Yeah, I think that's really all you can say. Like, I'm pleasantly surprised. And like I said, I hope it happens again. And yeah, given different financial circumstances on NASCAR's end, you know, I would like to go see that in person just to experience it, you know. Seeing NASCAR cars outside of, and for all the new fans maybe listening to this, that's how you say it, NASCAR cars, not NASCARs, just putting that out there. Mm-hmm. Since we're going to have a flood of new listeners after this Chicago weekend. Welcome, friends. But yeah, to see NASCAR out of context is always fun. Again, I got to eat my words. Last week, I think I said I wish it was just an exhibition, mm-hmm. not a points race. I have changed my mind about that.
Yeah.
I'd like to rescind that comment. I was wrong. This has every right to be on the schedule. I think my ill feelings just really come from there just being yet another road race, and I think we have too many of them. That's it.
Well, I mean, I think it's fair to say we'll probably have at least one to two less next year.
It seems
unless,
like
unless
it.
They get swapped out with another road race, which who knows, that could happen too.
Yeah, I guess we'll find out.
Mm-hmm. But what else do we have to talk about from the weekend?
Well, you guys get to watch Marco Andretti next weekend wreck a truck. That'll be fun.
I do. Ashley does not. I'm the only one.
I will not be in Mid-Ohio. No.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought he was racing Atlanta.
No, it's Mid-Ohio Trucks.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
What's his name? Greg Van Alst is going to be in Xfinity?
That's the guy. He's driving for Tommy Joe Martins. That's right. Greg Van Alst. Yeah, he's going to be running there. He won the Daytona ARCA race earlier this year and lost his ride due to lack of funding.
Oh, that guy. Yeah, he made the sad sack speech about how he couldn't afford to keep racing. Hell yeah, good for him.
Yeah, now he's getting a shot from Tommy Joe, and no better guy to do it, honestly, you know, to be someone who... claims to be a champion of the little guy in racing and seems to put his money where his mouth is a lot of the time. So good on Tommy Joe for giving him a shot. And he might have a shot at actually winning it. So
I hope
or doing well anyway. He's not going to be any worse than fucking half the field out there. So
I mean, Tommy could use some good finishes because he definitely seems to get a bunch of shit wrecked a lot of times, which sucks. But I like him. I like his team a lot. And I like some of his drivers. So hopefully he has a good finish this weekend.
All of them but one.
Which one do we not like?
I don't care for Jeffrey Earnhardt.
Oh, Jeffrey, that's right. Yeah, I forget. Yeah. I forget about him, too.
Mm-hmm. The black sheep of the Earnhardt family.
Yeah. My buddy Ryan Bamberry, he always used to put it, he's definitely more of a Jeffrey than an Earnhardt, the way he drives, which I think there's no more appropriate way to put it. If you're listening to this, Bam, congratulations. That quote has been floating around my brain for like 10 fucking years now, and it finally made it somewhere. But definitely, I got to agree, more of a Jeffrey than an Earnhardt when it comes to being behind the wheel.
Put that on a t-shirt.
Seriously. Yeah, big race weekend coming up for you guys, huh?
Yeah, you know, I've got, like I said, I got Mid-Ohio on Friday, and then as of right now...
The great
now,
excursion is about to begin.
Yeah, we'll see how it all goes. You know, as of right now, I mean, the weather Saturday is looking great, and then Sunday, of course, there was, you know, thunderstorms and shit all week, and now... They've all seemed to cleared off the weather calendar except for Sunday. There's still, you know, chance of rain, but
yeah.
You know, I lived in the South too in the summer, so I know what these storms can be like. So,
it's a night race too, so them afternoon thunderstorms might scoot their way on out.
Yeah, I'm not overly concerned about it. You know, this weekend, at least this Sunday for me, I mean, it's half about going to the race and half about going to a race with old friends I haven't seen in years and getting to experience them experiencing what NASCAR is like. So
yeah, exactly. And at least you have the benefit of going to a track that should it rain at all, they do have lights and are prepared to run till God knows when. So
yeah, I mean, I don't give a fuck. I'm only in Atlanta for 36 hours, so I
let
hope I get to see the race. If I miss it, fuck. But you know, hopefully, like, if they gotta start at midnight, I don't give a shit. I'll just, you know,
yeah,
we'll deal with it. So yeah, racing weekend coming up. What happened in F1? Was there shit in F1? Max Verstappen won again, and then like
the
track limit
guy.
Bullshit. Who cares?
Yeah. Well, it's funny. NASCAR couldn't have held the street race on a better weekend than this one.
Yeah.
Where guys have physical concrete and tire enforcing track limits, and a lot of F1 fans tune into this because it was different. You know, there's that sort of butthead attitude about oval racing, which we don't need to talk about here.
Yeah.
But it was on television on NBC, and it's a road course. Like, hell yeah, I'm going to watch this, and we're going to see how fucked up it is. And I had a lot of people messaging me who aren't NASCAR fans, you know, not complaining, but about NASCAR. They were complaining about F1. It's like, man, there's so many like time deletions and time penalties. You know, I think Esteban Ocon got penalized all the way back to like the 2018 season. I think he like had like I forget how many infractions. It was like 40 seconds worth of time penalty for track limits, which is fucking stupid.
Yeah, that seems
and like,
really
weird. I'm all for there being consequences for driving outside of the racetrack. Mm-hmm. But not to go backwards safety-wise, but put a fucking wall there or a sand trap, please.
Yeah, I mean, it's
just something
sand
other
trap.
Than
sand trap seems like a safe way to do it without. I mean, it's gonna do its job to slow the cars down, but also not destroy anything or possibly hurt anybody. You know, so why the hell not?
Yeah, but that was. I don't know. I like the Austria track. It's definitely cool looking, but I didn't really watch much of it. And
I don't watch it. I literally tuned into
care.
The last. I tuned into the last half of the lap, last lap, and got to see. Oh, Max won again. Great. Turned it right off.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. What else happened? David Gravel won over the weekend in World of Outlaws. That was kind of neat. What else fucking happened? There's a lot of rainouts. I can tell you that much. A lot of rain all over the country, and basically Chicago Sunday night was one of the only things that actually got to run. I'm pretty sure RTJ won somewhere, you know, as such as tradition. Bobby Pierce had a big win, I can tell you that much, in the World of Outlaws tour for the late models, so good for him.
I wonder, I got to see who's entered for the Tuesday race here, because... still got to get my tickets for that, but I think my neighbors might be joining me for that. My neighbors actually went to Sandusky Speedway on Friday night, but I was tired and just didn't feel. I had eaten shit earlier in the day on my bike and didn't feel like going to a race. But speaking about people who don't watch NASCAR, don't watch motorsports, my neighbor, when he saw ads for the Chicago race last week, he was all excited about it and he was asking me if I was going to watch. And, you know, of course, and my neighbor, he's in his late 60s and during one of the cautions in the Chicago race, I went over and asked him, "You watching? What do you think?" He's like, "Nah, we turn that shit off. We like it when the cars are all bunched up. We don't like it when they're all spread out on road courses." I'm like, "What? I don't know what you're expecting, but you know, he didn't see the finish.
The fucking narrowest track that we have, and he expects them to be bunched up the whole time. Okay, bud.
Yeah, I don't know what was appealing to him if."
Put restrictor plates on them.
Yeah. Sure. Why not?
About time.
Yep. I don't know what else to talk about with Chicago, and I don't really want to get too deep into the Brett stuff just because he's such a piece of shit. And,
Yeah, I'm fucking tired of hearing the internet talk about that guy. He's the Darf of the Week, whether he likes it or not.
Well, he's not the Darf of the Week. Well, I guess, technically, going by Freddie Kraft, he is a Darf, apparently. But
if he's a fan on couch, he's the Darf of the Week.
Yeah, for sure.
And I'll say he made some great points on DBC.
And that's where I'll be fair to him, is like, does it seem like Chicago maybe doesn't want NASCAR there? You might be right. Yeah. That's the one point I'll make. But the thing is, all the points that he made on DBC were not the ones he were making for weeks on Twitter. They were not the racist dog whistles. They were not the fear-mongering bullshit. And he straight up, like, just joked about, like, as a more or less kind of employee of colleague, like wanting a colleague driver to wreck another driver who raced him cleanly. He just joked about that, like, you know, as a representative of the sport and teams and stuff, like, that's just not it's not a good look.
I won't get him twisted too much over that. I get where he's coming from, but it's just, yeah, it's just kind of comical in context with the whole body of work over the weekend. I do actually have a Darf of the Week. I forgot about that.
We do have a Darf of the Week. Yes, we do. You can pull up the tweet, though, because I know. Now, I guess we should. I forget this guy's channel name, but he's a YouTuber, and apparently he's not a well liked one. And there's already a bunch of YouTubers I'm not huge fans of, but this is one that even, like, the YouTubers, like, most people don't like, hate this guy.
I think I've mentioned the one or two. I like Slap Shoes.
Slap
does good job. NASCAR Man does a great job.
Yep, Brock Beard is in the same vein. He works with NASCAR Man. He actually just put out a Trevor Boy's piece, which I haven't watched yet because I feel like it'll bum me out, because I love, anytime I watch races in the 80s and I see Trevor Boy's name pop up, I get so excited. For whatever Canadian reason, I don't know why, I just always liked him.
I tried to watch that the other night and promptly fell asleep. It wasn't his fault by any means. I'm sure it's great, but it was just, you know, too late and too many beers for that. But yeah, I can't wait to watch that. And I was actually going to suggest that be our video of the week, but we already made a decision on the one we're going to watch this week, which sort of ties the whole room together because it involves Australia. But yeah, NRF Productions. I've never watched a video from this guy. I don't plan on it because I'm sure it would just give me a fucking aneurysm. This was actually decided before the weekend even started. He posted something like kind of like a week ago, something like that.
It was before the weekend, but it was probably a week from today.
Within the confines of the criteria for choosing a Darf of the Week, but I would say that this actually definitely puts him in the running. This qualifies him for the Darf playoffs. There's no question about that. He's locked in. He posts a photo of a rendering of a set of bleachers right across from a very tall set of apartment buildings. And he says, "This seems like a questionable spot to have a large grandstand full of spectators. The building on the right is the Metropolitan Tower, a functional apartment complex. Yeah, I hope the city of Chicago learns something from the tragic Las Vegas shooting in 2017. Which is, you know, that earns you the R word on any other show, but since we're an MRN property now, or could be. I don't want some kid on Spotify in 20 years hearing this on the MRN archives to hear such a swear word, but this guy's a complete R word. And a couple of F words, too, for that opinion. That was really fucking stupid. And then he followed it up on Sunday during the race, saying, "People wonder why NASCAR has never done a street race before. I think we're starting to see why." And then he follows it up again with, "NASCAR didn't need to be for the streets," which is kind of funny out of context. "If they had built more tracks close to the actual cities they represent, like Richmond and Gateway, instead of 30-plus minutes away, they wouldn't need to do this. This is arguably the biggest failure in NASCAR history." I'm sorry, no. "Arguably the biggest failure in the pursuit of new fans." That's what he said.
Yeah, I don't think that's true at all. Like, I think that
I would argue this is purely fan service, reaching out to a new audience. I feel like they would build tracks in the middle of a city if they could, which they did try to do in fucking Staten Island, of all places, which I guess is also 30 minutes away from the real New York, if you ask a New Yorker.
Oh, it is, yes.
But even, the Trump Speedway, look that shit up. That's a whole thing.
I remember all that stuff. And, yeah, even though I'm an upstate New Yorker, like, yeah, Staten Island is not New York City.
Yeah, there's a reason why they don't hold auto races in the middle of cities and build tracks, is because people bitch about it. If they aren't race fans, like, people will build the housing. We've talked about this on the show like every week.
Nashville Fairgrounds.
Yeah, it's literally people like moved in around the racetrack and are complaining about the noise. So of course they're not going to build a fucking speedway in the middle of Chicago. But you know, this is temporary. It was to reach those new fans. They did it in Los Angeles too, and that also worked. So yep. And it's just dumb.
Not to mention that like this race was the most watched race on TV in years. Like, it was the biggest, I think it was maybe the second biggest race of the year throughout all motorsports as far as ratings go. I think the Indy 500 was the only thing it was behind. But, I mean, it did its job. Like, this race was not, it wasn't for us, like, traditional fans, necessarily. It was to try to catch some of that F1 audience. It was to try to get new fans involved, try to get people like, oh, this is something different. It's not just cars going in a fucking circle.
Yeah.
And it did that. Like, it accomplished
absolutely.
Every...
Absolutely. You know,
even though those of us like maybe weren't necessarily excited about it, like, it still fucking worked. And like, I was thrilled to see that finish. I was thrilled to watch that race. It worked. Like, there's, and the fact that anyone wants to deny that, they're just delusional.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't add anything to that. So that guy's my dart for the week. I hope you get banned on your channel for I don't know. What can you not put on YouTube? I hope Disney comes after your ass. Like, that you didn't notice an uncleared sample from, like, I don't know, fucking, what's a Disney movie?
Cars. Jesus. Just Cars. Put a Cars clip in there. I don't fucking know.
Then maybe they'll sue him for, like, having Winston will come in and sue him for having a logo in his videos and shut his channel down. Whatever happens, I hope your channel gets shut down, and that'll be that. So,
yep.
Darf of the Week, NRF Productions. I won't say that name ever again on this show unless you say something dumber.
Until the playoffs.
Until the playoffs come. And, sir, you're locked into Phoenix. fucking guy.
But that, I guess, it brings us to our video of the week. And again, going back to the whole Australia theme, we decided to watch the 1988 NASCAR Calder Thunderdome race. It was the Goodyear 500. Now it's 500 kilometers, not miles. And this took place at the Calder Thunderdome, which was a track that was built, I think it was 87 was when it was done, and it's more or less a slightly scaled down version of Charlotte.
Somewhere between Rockingham and Charlotte. I guess it's probably the closest modern comparison would be Nashville now.
Well, the layout is definitely like Charlotte, but its size is probably closer to Rockingham. I think it was like 1.15 miles or some shit when I looked it up.
So kind of like Nashville.
Yeah, but you know, this was NASCAR's first international race, and oddly enough, this took place in February of 1988, which, you know, right after Daytona and Richmond, which was kind of odd placement for that. You would think that they'd run that during the off season at some point, but regardless.
Yeah, I didn't realize it was after those two races. I thought it was before the season.
Hmm. Yeah. And yeah, this race featured a handful of Cup regulars and Winston West guys who, you know, brought their cars over on a boat, which we'll get into that in a little while.
Yeah.
I'll save that for later on. But and also a bunch of Australian racers. Really, I would say the only one that even stuck out in my mind was Alan Grice, who he got a bunch of TV time. He kind of looked like Lemmy. If Lemmy was a race car driver, a little bit, which I thought that was cool. A lot of weird cars. Like, there were only a couple cars that you would even recognize. You know, Neil brought his normal 75 Raymar Valvoline car over, and Dave Marcus had his car. Herschel McGriff had a car. Bobby Allison had, I don't even know what the hell he was driving. He was driving like a Buick LeSabre. Which at that time, they were already driving the Regal, because this was 88. It was after he won the Daytona 500. So I don't know. He must have taken a Busch car. It was one of the coolest looking cars I've ever seen him drive. Yeah. I absolutely adored that car. It was
beautiful. Obsessed with that paint scheme. I wish it was on t-shirts, hats. I want that car on something.
Really, 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 really fucking cool. But anyways, let me get to my notes here because...
While you're looking at him, there's a couple other pretty big Australian guys. Dick Johnson being probably the biggest Australian driver, and he actually had some Winston Cup starts as well.
Okay.
But he was a big supercars guy, and if I'm not mistaken, I think he was a big driving force in trying to bring NASCAR and this style of racing to Australia to begin with. Mm-hmm. And I also really enjoy how this race sort of, and maybe I'm wrong about this, and perhaps this is in your notes, but this does kind of lay out the format for what NASCAR ended up doing in Suzuka in Japan and other exhibitions, where it's just a shit ton of Winston West guys like Herschel McGriff and Bill Venturini's out there cruising, you know, which
I guess makes sense. A, when you think about when this actually happened on the schedule, I guess that kind of makes sense as to why, you know, a lot of the bigger name guys weren't entered. That said, you've got the two of the fucking winners from 88 in the field already, which is, you know, those guys could make it. Why couldn't, you know, Earnhardt make it? But that's another story. You know, being that they were floating all these vehicles across the ocean, you know, I'm assuming it took a lot of time, and teams didn't want to travel all the way across the country just to put their cars on a boat to be sent overseas. So I guess I can kind of understand why it was kind of an odd field. But getting to the notes, this race was broadcast in the U.S. It was on ESPN, but it's on whatever national TV network is on in Australia. It starts off with a pretty stereotypical yet also focused on crashes and like pit road incidents montage of 80s racing clips. I think it was kind of interesting to see NASCAR not just in that time period but through the perspective of another country. How are they going to edit this footage to get Australian people to watch? We're just going to put all the chaos in it, not even like cool highlights, just like cars crashing. That's kind of what they did.
That's also how they market supercars a lot of the time, though. So there's a similarity in the American redneck and the Australian bogan. They are one and the same.
Yes. And, you know, let's also not forget that Australia was a company that was born out of
Irish prisoners.
So, you know, there's that. So getting back to my notes, you know, we got Neil Bonnett, Bobby Allison, Kyle Petty, Dave Marcus, Michael Waltrip. Those are like the big name guys as far as cup regulars go. Again, we said Herschel McGriff, a bunch of other Winston West guys.
Also Jim Richards, he was the other big he was a Kiwi, but he's the other big supercar guy, or whatever the equivalent was in those days. 7 Bathurst 1000 wins. That's not easy to do. So it was kind of him and Dick Johnson as the Australian contingency that everybody was watching. But
such a great name.
Dick Johnson or the other one?
No.
Jim Richards.
Well, there was a guy in the 80s in the US called Slick Johnson. So that's another cool name guy. But this was, going back to the track itself, it was built by a guy named Bob Jane, who invested a lot of his own money in this track, too. I don't know. I don't totally know his story. I was trying to do some research before the race, but I think he was just like a race promoter, more or less.
I kind of enjoyed the footage of the track being built. You don't really see much of that.
No, you definitely don't see much of that. And this apparently was the first, like, racetrack built outside the U.S. that was meant to directly mimic a NASCAR track. So I thought that was interesting. You know, again, you get a lot of Australians trying to explain NASCAR to its Australian audience. So, you know, for those of us who are already pretty familiar, it's a cool montage, a bunch of cool, like, behind-the-scenes stuff and, you know, clips either you've never seen or haven't seen in years. I will say, during a bunch of these interviews, and with Herschel McGriff especially, there's flies. Like, they keep flying out of these people's faces. Right in the interview, they don't edit it or anything, and Herschel McGriff probably like 8 or 9 times tries to get this fly off of his face and just can't get it done.
Now, Rob, did you have this problem when you toured Australia?
It was winter. Well, Australian winter, so it was like August or July. No, the flies were dormant. I didn't see any too crazy big bugs or anything like that. That's for sure. They were all hiding in the ground until I left, which was fucking great.
It was nice of them.
It was very, very nice. But yeah, I don't like giant bugs. I guess they have their place, but I don't know. I'm all set. They can do something about that, as far as I'm concerned. But yeah, no flies that I'm aware of. But hey, people eat flies in their sleep every year, so who knows what actually happened.
Okay, well, thanks.
A little something to think about tonight as you rest your head down to sleep.
Tape my mouth closed.
We got Chris Economaki over there, and he is just a wealth of, I guess you could say comic relief. To me, it's unintentional comic relief, but I could listen to him interview people and explain shit all day long.
That was the Pit Road guy?
Yeah, Chris Economaki.
Yeah, absolute legend.
At one point, he was talking down on Pit Road, and he started coughing really bad, and I'd bet good money it was because he swallowed a fly.
Suck one of them flies down.
They had kind of a weird 2-day qualifying process, but Neil Bonnett was on the pole for both days. Before the race starts, they have a shot on pit row of two guys holding up a kangaroo for some reason and like just taking photos with it, and then immediately straight into it, just a fucking shot of a Confederate flag. Like, just one thing to the other.
If like one of the NASCAR teams brought that with them, or if the Australian people put it up thinking, oh, this will make them feel at home.
At the very end of the broadcast, they have another little like montage of like they really like America brought all of its shit over, and like they showed another Confederate flag, and like it really just seemed like they tried to make that whole, I don't know again if it was Aussies doing it or Americans bringing their own stuff over, but they tried to make
both.
That whole weekend,
I imagine.
Yeah,
it's both.
Yeah, they made that as American as possible, and in 1988 that meant Confederate flags still. There was no catch fence on the backstretch, which I thought was wild. I studied that. I was like, there is absolutely zero catch fence, and I can like see people next to the wall. That's not safe at whatsoever. Like the catch fence, even on the front stretch, like only actually covered the grandstands. Once they got into the turns, there was no catch fence whatsoever. Again, this is 1988, and yeah, Bobby Allison's Talladega record happened. You know, that probably wasn't going to happen at this track, but still, you know, interesting to see that, you know, how safety standards in other countries just weren't really there. Trying to look here.
Or in the U.S. either at this point.
Well, yeah, at that point, I mean, I'm trying to think.
It's kind of ubiquitous worldwide, you know.
I was going to say 1990, I think, is when they finally enacted pit road speeds and stuff. So, yeah, I mean, 88... Yeah. Yeah, safety. We were still, you know, nowhere near where we are now with safety.
Well, they had that whole system where like the odd numbered cars or whatever would pit, and the even numbered cars would pit separately. And you know, I forget who got hit on pit road. I think Bill Elliott hit somebody, right?
Was that? Yes, Bill Elliott killed somebody. Yeah.
Yeah, and that was. They tried all kinds of wacky shit before they put a pit road speed limit in place. But yeah, definitely like in that era where we're starting to see a lot of the things that. You wouldn't even think twice about back in these days as far as safety and just the way a race is run is concerned. And now you look back on it, and it's like, holy fucking shit, nobody died. That's incredible. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, barreling down pit road at 150 miles an hour.
Yeah. Now, Michael Waltrip, he gets a lot of TV time in this show, never for any good reasons.
The most popular driver in 1984, apparently.
Apparently.
Yeah.
News to me. But he's like the first car that pits like three
laps. Says it right
in.
There on the screen.
Where
I missed
was he?
That.
Yeah, where was he most popular driver? Where was he voting?
Where? I don't know, but it's on the screen somewhere. When he pulls in and his fucking car is sitting there motionless. A little graphic comes up declaring him as such. So
it was that hair that got him those votes.
I guess so.
Let's see here. But yeah, later on in the race, he causes another caution because he's dropping oil on the track, and then somehow gets back out on the track, and then causes a third caution when his bumper falls off. So Mikey did not have a great race. I don't know what the hell car he was in, but didn't have a good time.
The Bahari number 30 is what it was. So
was it actually still a Bahari car?
Yep, it was.
I guess at that point Bahari was around. Yeah. Alan Grice, who we talked about earlier, he was the fastest Aussie for a while, and he was running up front with the guys until Bobby Allison spun him out. And while granted this word doesn't really mean what it does here in the U.S., I was really hoping we get an interview with Alan where he called Bobby a right cunt or something.
Yeah.
Like, I would have loved that, but that didn't happen because he ended up... well, you know, speeding ahead a little bit, Allen got in another wreck. There was like a big wreck later on in the race, and Allen ended up breaking his collarbone, so he unfortunately didn't get any more TV time, much to my chagrin. Let's see here. There's Chris Economaki, and he's at one point he's explaining a gash in Herschel McGriff's tire, and he's sitting next to a crew member who doesn't ask any questions to, doesn't acknowledge.
Sitting so close to each
other. Yeah, just sitting there in the shot, and then they just, you know.
Do you mind if I sit down? That's how I imagine it going. Yeah.
Yeah.
I fucking yeah. Chris Economaki is was a national treasure.
Hey, there's,
I was definitely looking at him like he was waiting for him to ask him a question, but
yeah, a little bit.
This is way off topic, but just on Chris Economaki. Like, I know you guys have seen this, but speaking of Neil Bonnett, of course, since he's in this race, I guess it sort of ties it together. When he passed away in '94, and in the broadcast for the Daytona 500 that year, it leads off with Chris Economaki. You know, it was supposed to be a month that everyone was looking forward to. It's not, and just the way he says it. Yeah. Cracks me up so much every time. It's not. And it's like really well delivered, and it is what it is, you know, and like it's true. It was his honest sentiment, and that's the way he talks, but right. It cracks me up every fucking time I hear that, and I'm going to hell for it. So yeah. See ya down there, folks, if you laugh at it too. But anyway, back to Australia.
Getting back to what I just mentioned, the big wreck, there was like a 5 or 6 car pileup, where I guess Alan Grace, he had mentioned on the radio laps prior that he didn't really have much for brakes, and he ends up barreling through this wreck and smashes into Dick Johnson, who gets out of the car all pissed off. Meanwhile, Alan's got a broken collarbone, so he can't even get out and do anything about it. You see a lot of pit crews and just jeans and t-shirts. I don't know. I think some of them were crew members and some of them were just like Australian guys, because you also see a lot of guys pushing cars down pit road and falling. I got a kick out of that.
I think it was Dave Marcus. A lady ran over the pit wall and handed him some water and then ran back.
There you go.
Didn't really see that much back then. But.
There is a couple different U.S. driver profiles, and the first one is Bobby Allison, and it is this little inset promo is set to "Tell It to My Heart" by Taylor Dane, which A, I didn't realize this song was out in 1988, and B, is a wild song to use in a NASCAR race, especially Bobby talking Allison. About 50-year-old Bobby Allison, like fucking grandpa on the track, playing Taylor Dane in the background. And the announcer uses this line to describe Bobby. He says 1988 has been great to date for the Alabama throttle jammer, and that was delivered a little bit better with the accent, but I just thought that was a great use of words. Yeah, there.
Throttle jammer is really good.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely filed that one away into the old notebook for usage later.
Lap 208, there's a debris caution, and there's a fucking dog shit restart where I think cars are like 4 or 5 wide. Like, just no rhyme or reason, no rules. Just let them, the green's out, let them go. They don't give a shit.
The pace car really stuck out to me as just being ugly as fuck and just goofy.
I didn't research.
So much going on there.
I didn't research what that was. I have to feel like it's a Holden, but
it's a Holden or a Commodore. There's only 2 cars in Australia.
Well, I thought the Holden was a Commodore. I thought the Commodore was.
I'm sorry, you're right. Yeah.
Okay. It's like 4-door coupe looking thing with a giant spoiler and like comically large lights on top of it.
Yes, massive. It's a very, very 80s car. Really, honestly, this race, I mean, there's only 2 battles. There's Bobby and Neil, and then there's Dave Marcus and Herschel McGriff. Those are really the only 2 actual... You shouldn't say... I mean, there's probably other shit going on with other drivers, but those are the only 2 battles you really see at all throughout the whole race.
They were, like, fun battles to watch, though.
Oh, for sure. Like, they were very good. Yeah. Another little music note that I got a kick out of was they briefly, you could hear them going to commercial, and they used the song Friday on My Mind, which I forget who did it originally, but it's like an old like 60s, 70s power pop song, and I really like that song, so I just thought it was very weird to hear in a race broadcast.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do Americans listen to? And they just threw a bunch of random crap.
Yeah.
Taylor Dane.
Yeah. Yeah. a guy named Bob Howard wrecks basically by himself on lap 225. And here's where we get into my absolute favorite part of this entire video, and it's only about a minute and a half long, and I feel like they cut parts out of it. I haven't been able to find any more on this story, but one of the Winston West cars, the number 22 car, whatever car that was, when they transported the cars over on the boat, to save money, they put the engine builder of this car in the boat with the car as a stowaway. And the guy, after 3 days, was like, I can't deal with this anymore. And he gets out of the cart, or gets out of the cargo area, and just, you know, they arrest him, they douse him, all this other shit. And what ends up happening is Bob Jane bails the guy out, and to pay for his ticket home, he has him doing like just menial jobs around the track all weekend. And Chris Economaki,
carpentry job while being interviewed.
Yeah, which what the hell carpentry jobs are you in the middle of a fucking race?
Yeah, building the fence, I guess.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be a relaxing trip. It wasn't.
But Chris interviews this guy. His name is like Mitch Klon, I guess. I don't know if that's exactly how his name is pronounced, but he just basically talks about like the grocery list of food. He brings like spam and chips and crackers and all this other shit over. And
I wrote down the exact list because
I was hoping somebody did, because I was like, I'm not doing this. So if you have the list, please read it.
This was going to be a 3-week, 10,000 mile journey, and he brought 2 cans of spam, 1 can of tuna, 2 boxes of dry cereal, 3 bags of candy, 2 boxes of Twinkies, a box of cookies. That's it. For fucking 3 weeks.
Man
has
not prepared a meal for himself once in his life.
And I should say also, this guy looks
about right.
He looks and sounds like the type of guy that would try to do this. Like that's he just fits the stereotype perfectly for a dipshit redneck who's gonna try to hide in a car for 3 weeks, and then 3 days like, nah, I can't do it.
No,
like,
3 days he had fucking diarrhea from this junk food he brought and had to get some fucking fresh air.
I don't know, you guys. Yeah, have you ever been out on an open ocean? You ever been like on a big boat, like out in the middle of the sea somewhere?
No, thank you.
The waves alone, like, I've never been on anything too crazy, but I've done some overnight ferries and shit like that, and it sucks. It sucks being like in a chair. So I can't imagine what it's like being strapped into a fucking, you know, an Oldsmobile 88, you know, with no padding or anything like that.
Just spam and dry cereal starts churning around in there.
Yeah, and it's got to be hot as hell.
Yeah, probably completely dark.
Yeah.
Oh, for 100%. Yeah. Where do you go to the bathroom? It's everything. There's so many questions I have. And we only get to talk to him for about 30 seconds, and then he's gone. So yeah.
If one of those YouTubers we were talking about that we liked wants to do a documentary on this fucking guy, then I think that would be something I will help fund it. So if you're listening in slap shoes, which I know you're not, but if you are,
there you go. There's another caution for debris on lap 240, and the guy says Neil gets some sprint tires, whatever the fuck that means. There's the Michael Waltrip causing yet another caution when he loses his bumper. There's a little Kyle Petty spotlight, which is kind of not nearly as good as the Bobby Allison Taylor Dane one.
I don't recall seeing that Kroger car before.
Yeah, that's the first time I'd seen that one. I mean, Kroger had, they'd sponsored a bunch of weird cars around that time. Like, Kroger had actually sponsored Ernie Irvin the next year when he was driving the 2 car. So they did have involvement in the sport back then, but I don't know whose car that was or what. Probably a Winston West car, I'm assuming.
Oh, real quick, the other car, and actually the car I think that is the pace car, I can't really tell because the video is kind of blurry, is a Ford Falcon. It was the Holden Commodore and the Ford Falcon. Those are the 2 big ones in supercars at the time. And then the Nissan Skyline was out there too, but that's a non-Australian brand. Mm-hmm. But just had to save face there for all the Australians listening. So,
And then the last lap, you know, wasn't really a whole lot going on as far as the lead or anything like that. But I think there were 2 separate spins on the track and no cautions, no anything. You just kind of let it fly. which again, 1988, that kind of thing happened fairly regularly. You know, top 10 was, I don't have the whole top 10, but it was all U.S. guys, like all Cup guys and Winston West guys. The first Australian was 11th place, and he was over a dozen laps down. I mean, there were only like, I think, three or four cars in the lead lap at the very end anyways, so, you know, it wasn't like that dude, the Australians were the only guys not on the lead lap. Yeah. But this was America kicking Australia's ass. But again, oval racing is just not that much of a thing most places. You know, again, this isn't the first and only oval in Australia, but it was the first NASCAR style oval.
Yeah, sprint car racing is huge in Australia. Yeah. And you know, a lot of you probably know this, but you know, a lot of American guys and Canadian guys will actually go down to Australia in the off season and they'll race, like Kyle Larson, Tyler Courtney, all those guys, they'll all travel down there. Mm-hmm. And you know, try and collect trophies in the off season. So it's definitely, there's always been a sort of back and forth between North America and Australia. Yeah, it's just kind of funny how the big oval stuff didn't really take down there, and they really tried pretty hard too.
Yeah, I'll get into that after we finish the notes here. But you know, after the race, Neil gets, you know, they interview Neil, Bobby, and Dave Marcus, and, you know, Neil gives a nice interview, and he actually asked about Alan Grice, which I thought that was very a nice gesture from him. And then really the last note that I have is when Dave Marcus gets interviewed, Chris Economaki starts the interview with, "Dave, what are you frowning about?" Like, because I guess Dave was just, it was an intense race for him at the very end. And then the other question he asked him is, "What'd you have for breakfast today? You were all antsy," or whatever the fuck he said. So
the fucking breakfast question sent me, because I thought he was legitimately asking him what he had for breakfast. I was like,
for a second, I did too. So you're not the only one.
So, but I was kind of disappointed that I didn't get to find out what he had for breakfast.
It's probably Vegemite on toast. Mate.
But yeah, that was the race. Again, it was about 300-ish miles, 500 kilometers. This is the only event like this that they did at this track. In saying that, there was like a Australian NASCAR series they called OSCAR.
Yeah.
That ran at the track along with the Australian supercars until 2001, when I still couldn't find out any real info as to why the track closed, but the track did close in 2001. And there are a few videos online of people exploring the track the last couple years, and it's very odd because they still actually, the track itself, like the actual asphalt, still looks great. And the infield doesn't look too bad, but the grandstands are almost completely gone. I guess in my research, supposedly the grandstands were built with a bunch of like rubber tires underneath, like just buried in the ground, and like as those were eroding, the whole grandstand started to fall apart. They still apparently use the track for private events sometime. In 1993, there was a Guns N' Roses show that had a bunch of problems, not so much with like, you know, the band being assholes, but more like with transportation of fans to and from the track. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this track is still there, but they haven't used it in 20 years. And, I mean, supercars, apparently, do they even do oval races? It doesn't sound like they do.
No, there's a road course there. In fact, the Australian Grand Prix was held at Calder before, too. So it's a whole...
What I'm saying is they don't do any other ovals, though.
No, they don't. They don't race on ovals at all. So
yeah, so kind of odd that this track, you know, was only really in existence for not even 15 years and just kind of lays there. But again, this is kind of what happens when, you know, you try to make a massive expansion like this, where you try to take a completely unique form of motorsports and, you know, duplicate that halfway around the world. It's hard to pull off, and it's respectful that there was a touring series for a while over there. And you know, I would like to do some more research at some point as to why that failed.
Well, they raced counterclockwise, so it just looked weird. That's, I bet.
Well, that's weird, but I mean, it can't be that weird to the people who live down there, though, right? You think? I don't know.
Oval racing going the wrong direction? I don't know. It is pretty weird looking, but yeah, I do think it's really funny. You know, this video, of course, is NASCAR's attempt to branch out into the world and into the Australian market, which, of course, there was a lot of North American racing happening down there at the time as well. IndyCar was going there as well at Surfers Paradise, and there was a lot of, you know, kind of back and forth between those worlds, and the supercars would support that weekend as well. But I do think it's kind of funny how NASCAR tried to bring oval racing to Australia, and NASCAR brand specifically, and now here we are all these years later, and it's actually the V8 supercar style of racing that got brought to NASCAR and was a huge hit over the weekend. So it's kind of funny how that worked out in the long run.
Yeah, so I think it's good timing to have watched this. And, you know, again, this is not NASCAR's only attempt to race overseas, but it's they haven't done it since Japan, I don't think. You know, I mean, they've raced in Canada, but that's not international. That's just,
yeah, they were in Mexico too. They went down there, but that's also questionable how international that is. You know?
It's continental. To me,
nobody snuck in on a fucking boat. You know,
exactly. That didn't happen.
Mitch back over there to do some more carpentry and rebuild this track.
Yeah, get them grandstands back up. Stack the
tires back out. Get that man some Twinkies and put him to work.
I guess NASCAR also doesn't have a Winston West series to really pull from anymore. They're going to send like 8 12-year-olds over to Japan to race with like fucking Ross Chastain and whoever else they would send. You
know? Well, hey, listen, they already got Keelan Harvick racing God knows what in Europe, and he's like 8, so.
He is, yeah.
Make him
he's
go
very
do it.
Fast. Terrifyingly fast.
Well, so yeah, that's the video of the week this week. Who knows what we'll have next week? I haven't thought of anything yet, but it's going to be a busy week. We've already talked about Ashley and I going to Atlanta on Sunday, and I've got a whole bunch of races. So I would imagine our recording schedule will probably be similar to this week's next week, because I will not be able to record Tuesday. I'll say that as much. So
yeah, it'll probably be on Wednesdays for a little bit here. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's okay. Or Thursday release, that is, for those of you listening.
Yeah.
You're not on the same schedule as us, fuckers. But
yeah, that was this week's trip to Applebee's.
Outback.
I fucked my own joke up. Our trip to Applebee's.
Another round of Foster's in, governor, here at the Outback.
Well, Brian just said Appleback, so.
Appleback. Meet me at Applebee's.
That's a way to avoid copyright right there. Just end up in the restaurant.
When it happens, now we have a name. So, somebody write that down out there, please.
So yeah, you can find us at Meet Me at Applebee's on Instagram and Meet Me at DeBee's on Twitter. I haven't created any other accounts for any other the other social medias that are popping up, but. Maybe I'll come up with one of those. If anything, it'll probably just be the Instagram version of Twitter, because that seems to be pretty easy. But I barely use Twitter for the show anyway, so whatever. But yeah. Speedway screens for all the things, speedwaytsj.etsy.com. If you follow me on social media, if you see me at the track this weekend, I'll give you a sticker or something like that. So.
There you go.
Yep.
Now it's your turn.
Less and less every week.
still Snake Mountain True Love. If you see me in Atlanta, I'll share a nice cold Bush Light peach with you.
There you go. Gotta keep them ice cold. Rob Motes _ unofficial. Good news on my racetrack visit front. Looks like my big old RV camping plans are back on for Loudon, so I will be there all 3 nights of racing. So you can come catch me in the X lot. Still don't know exactly where we'll be, but you can come and say hi to me and the band out there. We're all going to be chilling, drinking some cold beers, and having a good time weekend after next. So,
hell yeah. Well, hey. Well,
that sounds far.
Yeah. I wish I was going. One of these years, I'll have to make it back up there. But my dad wanted to go to Syracuse for some big, massive car show. So,
that sounds as good. I don't know. You got a big weekend ahead of you. So,
yeah, there's only so many Cup races I can go to in a row at this point. So,
yeah, it's true.
Yep.
But you gotta go before they're $300 a piece, though. So,
I don't think that's gonna happen. At least not for a while. But again, thanks all for joining us at Outback this week, and yes. I guess we'll talk to y'all next week.
A proper good time with you out there, then.
What the fuck was that?
That was a real Australian accent, folks.
Yeah, oh. I'm not doing one of those.
Try it.
No.
Come on. Come on.
You did not just click it.
Everyone here in the Outback is waiting for you to do it. We'll get it next week. How does that sound?
Yeah, let me practice for a week straight.
All right.
Later, y'all.
Me and Brian will have some in-person lessons this weekend.
Yeah. Oh, man.